WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I gotta be me. I gotta be me. What else can I be? I want to live.
There appears to be a growing ironic affection for Vegas. Just one example is the Rhino anthology called Jackpot, the Las Vegas Story, which includes that Rat Pack anthem. Las Vegas has changed its image from gangster-run gambling town to a family getaway with entertainment spectacles. My guest Susan Berman grew up in the gangster era. In fact, her father, Davey Berman, was one of the mobsters who built the Strip in the 40s and 50s. He came to Vegas after running the rackets in Minnesota. In the beginning, he was Bugsy Siegel's business partner in the Flamingo Hotel. Then he took over the hotel after Siegel's death. By the time Berman died in 1957, he was part owner of 7 hotels on the growing Strip, including the Riviera. Susan Berman produced the recent Arts and Entertainment Channel series on Vegas, and she's written a new book called Lady Las Vegas, which is part history, part memoir. When her father was in his 20s, coming up through the ranks of the mob, he was arrested by the FBI, and the way he handled the agents earned the respect of the mob.
He was interrogated by the FBI in a small room in New York, and I believe he was only, 26 years old at the time. They were dying to get something on Lansky and Costello. As you know, they never got anything on Meyer Lansky except the usual, which was income tax evasion. And my father refused to talk, and they beat him, evidently to a pulp, and threatened him with everything. And at the end of 72 hours, he said to the FBI man, and evidently they told this to a reporter, it was quoted in the New York Times, "I don't care what you do to me, because hell, the worst I can get is life," meaning that he hadn't killed anyone. He wasn't going to go to the electric chair. He came out of Sing Sing after 8 years of hard time, and Lansky and Costello took him to a safe in Midtown Manhattan, and they said, "Here's $1 million. Take it. You've earned it. You're our boy." And my father said, "I don't want the money. I want money from your pocket to go to Minneapolis," which is where his parents and his brother were at this time, "and I want to run the rackets for you there." And that's what happened.
So that's how your father got to run the rackets in Minneapolis.
Right.
Your father moved to Las Vegas in 1944 at the request of Ben Siegel, Bugsy Siegel, who wanted your father to help him run the first casino, the Flamingo. What was Vegas like when he came down? Did he ever describe it to you?
I remember Vegas in the late 40s very, very well. We rode horses up and down the Strip. It was a very, very Western town, Terry. There were huge spaces on the Strip. There were only 3 hotels when I was a very little girl. And the Flamingo was the hotel furthest near the airport. And then there was nothing between the Flamingo and tiny McCarran Field. If you've been to Vegas today, it thinks of itself, and it possibly is, a major metropolis, McCarran International, hotels everywhere. This is far different than the Vegas I knew. The owners, the gangsters, mobsters, and their wives. We grew up in a very, very small town. We had, family picnics. We decorated Easter eggs at the Last Frontier Hotel. We had Passover services in the showroom during the first show only of the Last Frontier Hotel. We had sunrise hay rides. There was a livery stable in back of the Last Frontier. So it was a very, very small desert town where the only glamour and the only economic base was gambling.
You describe in your memoir, in your new book, your father and some of the other mob guys coming down with new families to settle Las Vegas. And you describe it was usually like the Jewish or the Italian guy from back east coming down with their young shiksa wives. And, your parents, your mother was 18 when she met your father, and he was 36. She was a performer in a sister act. He was running the gambling rackets in Minneapolis. But you say when your father took his wife to Vegas and when the other former, you know, gangsters came down to Vegas with their wives. It just wasn't a women's town, and it was really hard on the young wives. What was difficult for them?
My mother and most of the wives that came to Vegas came because Las Vegas was the only place their husbands could make a legal living because gambling was their skill and trade. It was their chance, their last chance to really make a legitimate living. And most of them had done hard time, like my dad, or done time somewhere. If they hadn't done time, their life was a life in the shadows of real society, Terry. Their life was a life of, you know, paying off the police and mixing with the lower elements because they were mobsters. So I think my mother and all her friends came to Vegas with the hope that this would be, you know, the most wonderful life ever, and here their husbands could be legitimate, and that's, you know, what the husbands wanted. This was their last chance. And for the wives, it didn't really work out that way because Vegas always was a mobster town, even, you know, still, even though gambling was legal, the shadows of these men's past many times eclipsed their future, as it did in my own family's case. It was a lonely life for the wives. And my mother basically waited home all day. She took me to school in the morning, or maybe the bodyguard did, and, you know, picked me up, took me to dancing lessons, and waited for my dad to call. There was always tension in the house because the fact of his past, something could happen to him. And, of course, when my mother had only been in Vegas for 2 years, Ben Siegel, who was my father's closest associate at that time, was killed. So she never got over the fear, as many of the wives did, that their husbands could die, as we say, in the mob, or, I don't know, I'm not actually in the mob, I'm the daughter, but as the mobsters say, die an unfortunate death. That was the worst fear of every wife. She never took a safe breath. And of course, the terrible fear that her child could be kidnapped. I don't think anything could make a mother feel more vulnerable.
Listen, I grew up worrying that I'd get kidnapped because there was so much just general hysteria about kidnapping in the 1950s. Did you worry that you'd get kidnapped? I had no reason to worry about this, but you probably did.
I didn't worry about it. My parents were completely hysterical about it. I think that there were special rules that we had for our family that I didn't realize was because my dad was a mobster. We didn't carry keys. Lou, our faithful bodyguard, you know, retainer, best friend, whatever you want to call him, basically I thought he was there to play gin with me. I considered him family, like my dad's brother or something, was always in the easy chair in the living room in our little house in Las Vegas. There was a knock at the door. It's Davey, and he would open the door. None of us had keys. You don't have keys because the idea being that they could kidnap the father, and they could, you know, take the father, get the key, and get in and get the mother and the child somehow. The windows in my room, my little house at 721 South 6th Street is still there, unbelievably. It's now a law office, and it's zoned commercial, but it was made a landmark because it was my dad's house. The windows, I remember as a little girl, the windows were moved up so that they weren't at eye level. No one could shoot into the windows. And there were all these regulations, you know, made to protect me from my father's past and possibly his present.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Susan Berman, and her father, Davey Berman, was one of the people who created the Strip in Las Vegas. Her new book is called Lady Las Vegas, and it's a companion to her TV series on Las Vegas that was recently broadcast on A&E. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about Vegas. This is Fresh Air. Back with Susan Berman. Her new book is called Lady Las Vegas, and she's the daughter of Davey Berman, who was one of the mobsters who created the Strip in Las Vegas. Your father became part owner of the Flamingo after Ben Siegel died, and then your father became part owner of several of the big hotels on the Strip. Was there a difference in the vision Ben Siegel had for Vegas and the vision your father had?
I don't think there was in terms of Las Vegas. It was actually Ben Siegel's idea. He said, you know, people are going to gamble anyway, and let's make an elegant place for them to gamble. Nevada has legal gambling. We can take over the whole state. I think the way that my father's vision differed from Ben Siegel's was mainly in personnel and management techniques, and that my father didn't kill people and basically, you know, did not threaten or use violence in any way. As I said, he was known as the mob diplomat, and after Ben died, he took over, and that was the end of, threatening of killing in Vegas and threatening of murder as a way, the classic thing that, you know, the mob solves its problems by the gun. Well, they probably still did, but not in Vegas, Terry.
So your father basically decreed there'd be no mob killing in Vegas. Was that so it would have a decent reputation and tourists would come out and gamblers could come out without worrying about witnessing gangland slayings?
Of course. I mean, bottom line economics, you know, no one's going to come to a town where they can be killed. And in those days, they promoted it as a family place. The kids could play in the pool. It was the only, you know, city in the country where a woman could get a martini by the pool. And, of course, they were promoting themselves as respectable, you know, hotel men, legitimate people now. And actually, they were. Their crime in Vegas was one of skimming. But they didn't consider that a real crime. They considered that ripping off the government. And in their minds, what had the government ever done for them?
I'm wondering what Vegas looked like to you when you were a girl. What seemed glamorous about it? Did anything seem glamorous to you?
It really didn't seem glamorous. I think as children, Terry, we only know the world that our parents choose to give us. You know, I knew my dad owned a hotel, so I felt powerful. You know, the hotel was really the center of our social life. My mother was very insistent that I live in a house. When my parents originally brought me as a baby there when I was 6 weeks old, they lived at the El Rancho because in 1945, that was the only place you could get phones after the war. There were no phone lines in Vegas, but you could get phones in the El Rancho bungalows. And as soon as they put phone service in 1946, my mother insisted that my dad buy a house. Many of the other children grew up in the hotel, but I did not. But we went to the hotel. Vegas, before air conditioning, you couldn't live unless you were in a pool. And very rapidly after I was born, air conditioning, carrier air conditioning came in 48, 49. And that really made the town a viable economic base, because before the hotels were air-conditioned, it was brutal. So every day we'd go to the hotel after school, you know, I'd be in the pool. I literally lived in the pool. I lived in water. And, you know, once or twice a month, we'd go to the floor show with my dad, and the entertainers came to our house. My father had a wonderful sense of humor, sort of a dry, ironic wit, and he hung out with Jack Benny and Jimmy Durante and all the old entertainers. And I just considered, you know, I did not consider it glamorous in any way. It was a small Western town in the late 40s, early 50s. My mother and I rode horseback. For shopping, for medical, we were flown to L.A. Vegas had no core of people. My father brought in the first doctor. He started the first synagogue. He brought in the first dentist. It didn't have a middle-class base.
What did your father tell you about gambling?
My father told me about gambling, don't. Basically, when I was 5 and 6, I used to run through the casino. I was not actually allowed in a pit, which was separated by a maroon velvet cord. But there were slot machines, not like today where they're at the airport and the grocery stores, but there were slot machines in the perimeter of the pit. And I used to go around with the sheriff, Dave Schumacher, and try to make a little extra loot by putting my hand. I'd have him lift me up, and I'd put my hand into the silver mouth of the, you know, thing. And I'd always make, you know, like maybe 20, 30 cents. I was thrilled. And I was fascinated by slot machines. I was always begging guests to lift me up so I could, you know, pull the handle. And when I was about 7 years old, my dad said, you know, gambling is for suckers and for rich men. I'm neither, and nor are you. I don't ever want to see you gamble. He bought me a slot machine of my own and showed me how they fixed it in those days so that people couldn't win. He gave me a key to the back, and he said, I'm giving you, in those days I went to Las Vegas Elementary School. On Fridays, we would bring money for a bank account. They started bank accounts for us, and he would give me a dollar every Friday, and he said, I'm going to give you a dollar every Friday all year. It was second grade. At the end of the year, you show me how many dollars you have in the bank. I'm going to give you the same amount in dimes for this slot machine, and you show me how much money you've made. And, of course, I had a key to the back, so I would immediately realize I'd put all these dimes in. I'd get really nothing back. Then I'd open the key to the back. I'd take out the box. I'd do it over. So I learned my lesson well. I'm not a gambler, Terry.
Well, what a great way to teach you that lesson. When you were growing up, your father never really talked to you about the mob. You didn't really understand that he was mob-connected. You just knew him as a wonderful hotel owner. When you found out about his mob connections, what did you make of it? Did that frighten you? Did it change your opinion of your father initially?
We lived in Las Vegas. He went to a job every day. He came home. His job was owning and running hotels. The mob aspects of his life, which was the counting room, counting so many for Meyer and Frank, so many for the government, so much for me, which I witnessed all the time since he taught me to count in the counting room, I didn't know was anything unusual. It's not like, you know, they wore guns in that way. When many years later, when I was in my 30s, and I did find out what my father had done way before I knew him, I was completely devastated in an intellectual sense. When you ask me if it changed my attitude or my love for my father, I can say no, because I think we learn lessons emotionally rather than intellectually. My father raised me in the most loving, supportive, warm way. He was there. He was the one that helped me with my homework constantly. He took me to the hotel with him every day. My independence was fostered. He told me about college from the time I was about 6 years old. In fact, it was kind of a joke, as I didn't realize, again, until I, you know, found out about his past and did my book, whenever he'd say, you know, Susie's going to be the first Burman to go to college, all his friends would guffaw. Great knee-slapping, cigar, you know, stomping. And I never understood it. In later years, I found out that college was the slang term used for men who went to prison. Sing Sing was referred, oh, I went to college for 6 years, Sing Sing. But of course, I went to UCLA and Berkeley. So I think I was devastated in the way you find out, you know, that your father was someone that you didn't know he was, that he did something for a living. And I think that's very much the way that he saw it. He did something for a living that was the only thing he could do to put food on the table. I'm not offering an apologia for him being a gangster in his youth, because I think it's a choice made out of options and out of desire. I think you have to want sort of a fast life and a violent life to go into that. I think you have to be filled with anger and rage to go into the mob. And I think he was, looking at his childhood. But it did not change my love or respect for him. And all the things that I feel and am today are very much a reflection of him, Terry.
You know, in the Godfather movies, there's a lot of attention paid to the contradictions between, you know, the Godfather always going to the baptisms and going to church and at the same time ordering executions. Your father had been, you know, connected to the mob. And also, being Jewish was very important to him. And you describe your father as the man who brought Passover to Vegas. And he and his friends built the first temples, the first synagogues in Las Vegas. I'm wondering what being Jewish meant to your father and how he kind of reconciled the criminal aspects of his life with the religious beliefs that he had.
My father, being Jewish to him, was the only identity that he really had that he treasured. He came to this country as a Russian immigrant. You know, he was discriminated against because he was Jewish. He was a person who was too old to join the army, and also he's a convicted ex-felon who'd done 8 years hard time at Sing Sing. He bribed his way into the Canadian army at 38 years old. He was rejected 15 times. He drove to every induction place he could throughout the Midwest thinking they would lose his records. He couldn't get in. He finally bribed a doctor in Winnipeg. He became he was decorated for bravery. He was a member of the Royal Manitoba Dragoons in Canada, which is like their Green Berets. And, quote, he wanted to kill 5 Nazis for every Jew they killed. Being Jewish to him was absolutely the most important thing. It was a clannish thing. It was a protective thing. He looked at it as a loving, you know, religion. He did not believe in God. I remember him telling me when I was 7 years old, I envy people that believe in God, Susie, but I don't. I don't know if he reconciled being in the mob and being Jewish. You know, how could you reconcile those two things? I don't know. But I know it was important to him, and he taught me the lessons well.
Your father died of health problems, yes?
He died of health problems. The story behind the story is that he was going to be killed and that he didn't want his wife and only child, of whom I am, to grow up with a father that was assassinated by the mob. He had a minor condition, and supposedly he went into the hospital not really caring and didn't tell the doctor, kill me, but didn't care if he lived or died. Everyone begged him to go to Cedars or Mayo Clinic. We were from Minneapolis, where no one went to Vegas for medical care. At this point, he had been told that if he didn't do certain things, I don't know what they were, that he might be killed. And a year afterward, his partner, Gus Greenbaum, and his wife were decapitated in Phoenix. So I don't think the life worked for him. It worked for 12 years, and then it didn't work anymore.
Susan Burman, what a story. Thank you so much for telling some of your family's story to us.
Terry, thank you.
Susan Burman's new book is called Lady Las Vegas,